Welcome to Living Above the Drama. I'm your host, Dr. Georgiana Donadio, and today my guest is Joyce Schaefers, who is a best-selling author, public speaker, workshop facilitator, and life skills coach who specializes in relationship counseling. The counseling model Joyce uses was created out of her need to break her own failed relationship patterns. She's not a superhero, but she does have a superpower. It's her ability to expose and help fix the emotional root causes that interfere with relationships and cause them to fail. She conducts her relationship practice in her office in Alberta, Canada, and virtually through her self-study online course called End the Arguing. You can connect with her on her website, joyceschaefers.com. Joyce, welcome to the show. I'm delighted with you. Good. Well, you're going to be actually sharing. I'm going to invite you to share your experience with our listeners, because what you were talking about is so key. And it's funny because a lot of times, you know, I have worked with therapists myself and work with people who work with therapists and know a great many of them. And unfortunately, I don't think that there is a focus on looking at root causes of why relationships break up. And I think the work that you're doing has really found a niche and has zeroed in to help people in a very positive way. So why don't you start, as we did in the beginning of our pre-interview, talking about, you know, your training as a life skills coach and how that evolved and, you know, how the training was actually focused on working in prison settings and how you chose, you know, really not to do that. So why don't you start telling us about your training in life skills coaching? Yeah.
Yeah, sure. Okay. So I took my training probably about 22 years ago. And really what we were trained to do was to run 10-week workshops, group programs for people who had been incarcerated. So our focus was to help them identify and connect to their emotions, and because often they experienced a lot of trauma. And you know, we always say that the emotions, those negative emotions, if they're not processed, they come out sideways in all kinds of forms of attack toward others and just, you know, acting out and through addictions. So the goal of the program was to help these people really identify their emotions, connect to them, feel them, process them, often through communication. So it was a really powerful but very basic kind of training. It was, you know, kind of emotions 101 is how I like to think of it. So that was the training that I took, and I saw a lot of value in that training. But because of my own sister's murder, I wasn't comfortable at the time to work in the prison setting. And so it was actually kind of on purpose. What I started to realize was that it wasn't just, you know, what we would have called high barrier people. It wasn't just, you know, people who experienced extreme forms of trauma that had difficulties with their emotions. What I started to see that, you know, people, high functioning people in mainstream society, which including myself, had difficulty connecting to their emotions and processing them, and really had no idea that, you know, their own traumas had an impact on their lives and in their relationships. So I didn't work in the prison, but what I did do is I started to do like little group workshops. At the time, I worked for the school system here in the city that's close to me. And so I would deliver kind of workshops. But over the years, my work really changed and developed. And it really came, it was born out of my own need, like you said in the intro, to understand what was driving this pattern I had of failed relationships. So I had three failed relationships. They were all with alcoholic men, and they all ended with them leaving me for other women. So when my ex-husband left me, that's when I realized, okay, I'm the common denominator here. And I know that if I'm the common denominator, then I'm responsible for my own cycle, what I call my cycle of emotional pain, this pattern of failed relationships. So the evolution of my work really started with understanding the emotions and trauma and how trauma creates emotional pain and suffering, and took me kind of full circle where I started to understand my own trauma, my own emotional pain, and how that was responsible for creating this pattern. So again, when my ex-husband left me, that was when I say I took out my big shovel and I started to dig. And for me, it was really uncovering what I call my broken bits and understanding, not only understanding how they were causing my failed relationship pattern, because awareness is important, but I needed that pattern to end. So I had to come up with the solutions that would actually make that happen, because I wasn't prepared to be in another failed relationship. So kind of in a nutshell, that's how my work progressed from just, you know, emotions 101, kind of basic understanding of emotions, to really seeing how they, you know, the unprocessed emotions are really responsible for creating some of our most challenging patterns.
Absolutely. And during the pre-interview, you shared with me one of your big triggers, which is injustice.
Mm-hmm.
And that is based on you had a 31-year-old sister who was murdered by her neighbor.
Yeah.
Do you want to share that story with us? That's a tough one, and it really helps to, I think, illustrate the kinds of things that can traumatize us and can change the way we look at the world and have relationships in the world.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So for me, so my sister, she was 31. She was 11 years older than me. I'm from a large family. So I was 20 at the time, and she was murdered by a neighbor of hers, who we later found out that she was afraid of. So she ended up, so through the whole process of her murder, she ended up stabbing him. So when he fled the scene, even though she passed away, he started to lose blood. And I guess he couldn't continue driving, so he pulled over and, you know, kind of passed out from the blood loss. And that's kind of how, in a way, we say she caught her own killer, if you will.
Yeah.
But the thing, of course, you know, there's so many emotions that happen or are caused from a situation like that. For me, I have intense anger. Also, though, when we talk about the trigger of injustice, so in the end, he only ended up, his sentence was reduced from, you know, life in prison for 25 years. To manslaughter, and I think he only served about 4 years. So when we talk about triggers of injustice, that is something that, you know, I still live with today. So things can be unjust or unfair, and I will notice that I will get more riled up than someone else, you know, if you will. And so a trigger is, I always say, that something that mimics our trauma, that evokes that emotional pain and suffering at the time, right? So way back in 1986, when my sister was murdered, something today can, an injustice can trigger that emotional pain from back then, okay? So my process and what I've realized is that it's so important to be aware of our trauma and our emotional pain and our triggers, and learn how to manage those triggers, so that we can restore emotional balance, if you will, and kind of show up in our life in a more balanced, emotionally calm sort of way, right? So I remember one experience of my old boss, and we were talking about, you know, the rights of prisoners and should they vote or not. And this is way, way back, right, when I was, you know, first close to the death of my sister. And I started to feel my whole body just catch on fire, and I was, you know, almost like enraged, right? And then I, now looking back, I see I was triggered, right? For me, you know, the idea of having prisoners having rights was an injustice to me, given, you know, my sister's light rights were stripped from her, right? So the goal is to is to understand the trauma and understand the emotional pain that it causes, and then work through that and restore our emotional balance, reset emotionally, so that we're not walking around with all these things triggering this intensity. Because what I've noticed is when we have that trauma that's triggered and there's this emotional, intense emotional response, it really makes communication almost impossible. So that was one of my very early experiences with trauma and the idea of triggers and how it really is very, you know, I always say, like, when I'm triggered, it's like I might as well throw my brain out the window. It's, you know, almost useless. Like, it's, I can't think straight. I can't hear what people are saying. I can't communicate effectively. So in the work I do with my couples, it really is important to understand the trauma, the emotional pain, and how that is being triggered in relationships. So I don't know if that was a long answer to your question.
No, that was a good answer, Joyce. My question for you, and I know the listeners are thinking the same thing. So how do you cope with your triggers around injustice that were caused by your sister's death and her murder? I mean, you know, obviously things come up. I'm sure you see news articles or you're watching a show or there's a conversation going on. And just like the conversation about, you know, prisoners' rights, things happen. People are talking. And suddenly you are triggered. So how do you, what is your process? What is the process that you go through, that you try to bring your clients through in order to, you know, to cope with those triggers and what they're causing in you?
Well, one of the biggest things for me had to be the awareness. Like when I think back to that conversation with my boss, it's like I had no idea, like, really what was going on for me. I mean, I had an idea, but I just, you know, I was just in the emotion so intensely. So I think awareness is the first step. You know, the more we know ourselves, the more we know our trauma and our emotional pain. And I always help my couples say, you know, there's an exercise we go through that I ask them to really take some time and identify all the things that trigger an intense emotional reaction, right? It's really important. For that, we can kind of step out in front of the situation then, right? So when I can see a trigger coming now, if that makes sense, right? I know.
No, talk about that. Talk about that. How do you see your trigger coming? And that would be a great insight.
Yeah, so just simply knowing that things that are unjust will upset me. That's all that is, right, is being aware of that. Because the awareness is half the battle. So in relationships, though, so say someone was abandoned as a child, and there's this rejection story that they have, right, that I always say this trauma sends a message to the child. What is that message? So if the trauma is abandonment, then the message usually is, I'm not good enough. Something's wrong with me, okay? And so the abandonment, when there's a trigger, then if we remember, triggers mimic our trauma. So any form of rejection, right? So you take someone who has abandonment issues, say. So if they see that friends, say four of their friends went out for dinner and they didn't invite them, well, that could be a trigger, right? That could potentially trigger their emotional pain of rejection through the abandonment. Do you see? So when I talk about getting out ahead of the, like, on the awareness part, when we really start to pay attention to the things that evoke that intense emotional reaction, right? So that's the thing about a trigger. It's not just like feelings like, oh, that's annoying, or that sucks, you know, or I don't like that. It's like an intense response, right? So when we can identify the things that mimic our trauma, so say rejection or abandonment, or for me in my sister's case, you know, the injustice, well, then I can kind of see it coming down the tracks, right? It's kind of like I can see that train coming down the tracks. Now I can be more prepared, okay? And so then the process, so the awareness is the first thing, and then the process I go through is, you'll notice that when you're triggered, there'll be a line of thinking that will lead to an emotion. So I always say, you know, negative thoughts, you can't help but feel negative emotions if your thoughts are focused on the negative, right? So usually when a trigger is, you know, when we're triggered, we'll have these thoughts about, so for me, this injustice, and it's not fair, and that's wrong, and that's terrible, you know, all of these negative thoughts about this situation will lead to that negative emotional response. So managing a trigger is about recognizing that and say, okay, if I understand that putting negative thoughts in my mind is going to lead me to a negative emotional response, then I want to do everything in my power to switch that dialogue and say, so in terms of injustice, it would be for me to recognize that if I'm really, you know, if I'm feeling triggered and it's intense, then one of the first things I say is I'm taking this personally, right? I'm reliving the murder of my sister and the sentence that he got. So I'm taking it personally, and also I can validate it and say, you know, because I want to move through emotions, but I don't want to dismiss them, right? So validation is really important. So I validate and say it makes sense that injustice triggers me. It's okay, you know, I can feel that emotion. Because when we validate, the goal is to process the emotion, right? When we dismiss them and say, oh, I shouldn't think that way, or I shouldn't take it personally, well, it's like we're skipping over the step and we're not going to process it. So we have to validate. I feel like validating is really important. Feel it. But then just kick into like, okay, so do I like this feeling? Do I want to sit in this feeling? Or would I rather, or, you know, reset emotionally, and then, you know, then the new dialogue can take place, right? So in relationship, sorry, go ahead.
I was just going to say is that what a lot of us do is, first of all, emotions are not rational. So people should put a big sign up in their house: emotions are not rational. Okay, because they're not. They're not based in anything rational. And what a lot of us do, the way we get out of those responses is there's something else we want more than to feel justified or feel that we're expressing or venting or we are literally doing justice to our trauma. For instance, you know, like when you get upset about your sister, it's completely reasonable that you would get that upset about what happened. And injustice is a very inflaming thing. However, if what you want for yourself is to have a different kind of experience or different kind of relationship in terms of your personal relationships, then by resolving that to some extent, you can have a better quality. You can have a different experience. And I think most of what motivates us to change the way we react to trauma has to do with if we're not getting in life what we want and we realize we have a problem. I have a friend that his children always say about him, he doesn't play well with others, okay? And that has led to so many problems on so many levels with so many different kinds of relationships. So the motivation becomes, I kind of want to learn to play a little better with people because, you know, I'm not too happy like this. So, I think that's really important. And we're actually at the break point. We have to take a break and come back. But I think when we come back, let's talk about, because you and I talked about this a lot, we know that emotions are not rational. And we know why. So when we come back, did you read that chapter, by the way? Did you download and read the chapter?
I looked for it and I couldn't find it, so I think I was on the wrong spot.
Oh, no. Well, when we come back, let's really talk about the neuropsychology of you know, how we get imprinted, how we get traumatized, and how that is recorded in our brain. And I think if people understand what emotional trauma actually is, which is very neurological, they can be a little bit more objective. They can take a step back with a little bit more ease because they can understand it's something they can control. So we're going to take a break. We're going to be back with Joyce in a moment. So listeners, don't go away.
Are you tired of not feeling heard and not feeling valued? Are you longing to receive the love and respect you want? There is a solution right now. Transform your relationships with easy-to-learn, proven communication skills. Dr. Georgiana Donadio, relationship communication expert and number one national best-selling, award-winning author of Changing Behavior, explores the unconscious patterns contributing to stress, lack of fulfillment, and our relationship interactions. By learning and applying the simple principles of behavioral engagement, which has been clinically tested in leading hospitals, to develop mindful peer presence, you can experience the happiness and fulfillment you deserve in your relationships. Begin changing your behavior today with Living Above the Drama radio show host, Dr. Georgiana Donadio. Call 888-354-4325. 888-354-HEAL. Call now.
Become credentialed for the emerging medical health and wellness field. Work within healthcare environments or start your own private practice and bill for your services with your own NPI number. Train for this exciting specialty in patient-focused health and wellness education with the National Institute of Whole Health, NIWH, the only nationally accredited training program for patient health education and advocacy. Open to credentialed health and education professionals, our training qualifies for health educator liability insurance, a national provider identification number, and our expert-prepared billing and coding manual.
For more information about the National Institute of Whole Health, visit www.niwh.org or call 1-888-354-HEAL, 888-354-4325.
If someone said you could transform your life and enhance your relationships by using a few simple communication techniques that can be applied in almost any setting, would you want to learn these skills? If the answer is yes, you've picked up the right book. This easy-to-read guide is loaded with simple skills that have been scientifically shown to have a huge impact on our relationships. By using the steps in this book, you will be able to enhance not only your life, but the lives of everyone around you. If you have the intention to practice and apply these skills, it will become a natural part of who you are. A true must-read for anyone who wants to transform their professional and personal lives. Changing Behavior. Immediately transform your relationships with easy-to-learn, proven communication skills. By Georgiana Donadio.
You can purchase Changing Behavior by Dr. Georgiana Donadio by visiting Amazon.com, where it is available in both Kindle ebook and paperback.
Dr. Gass is on the advisory board of HealthCorp, a new program which was begun by Dr. Mehmet Oz.
65% are overweight and 35% are obese, and the sharpest rise in this country is between the age group of 4 to 8 years old.
Throughout his career, he has been inspired by patients who have experienced dramatic recoveries through lifestyle changes.
The National Institute of Whole Health is a perfect example of how people will learn to really take control of their lives in a healthy way. What they've done is they've collected basically the who's who of integrative health, and they've brought them together to give a series of lectures where they can then communicate with health professionals to basically deliver the message that we have to look at medicine from a different perspective.
For more information about the National Institute of Whole Health and their accredited professional continuing educational programs, go to www.wholepersonhealthcare.org or call 1-888-354-HEAL.
And we're back with Joyce Schaefer, who is a best-selling author and a workshop facilitator. She has a online study course called End the Arguing, and you can connect with her on her website, joyceschafers.com. Joyce, before the break, we talked about, let's talk about how does this happen? I mean, you know, we're little babies and we're toddling around and, you know, we get to be, you know, young people. And that's where most early trauma is recorded. But of course, it's recorded throughout our whole lives. So let's talk about the neurology about that. And would you like to start that conversation? Because I would love to talk about the research that I've been involved with regarding that.
I would love to hear your research too, absolutely, because I think for me, my focus is on the emotional piece, and I'm very fascinated about, you know, the brain aspect. So what I call it is the cycle of emotional pain. So the trauma happens early on, it creates emotional pain and suffering, and because of our conditioning, which says, you know, we have to look outside of ourselves to feel better, right? So things out there have to happen in order for me to feel good. Because of that conditioning, we keep looking outside of ourselves to heal this trauma pain. Normally, we don't know that we're doing that, but that's in the work that I do, it's about understanding our cycle of emotional pain. How am I looking outside of myself? And what am I attached to? Often people can be attached to substances, or even people can be attached to working out, you know, or spending, you know, spending habits, buying stuff, all these things with this idea of kind of making themselves feel better. They're looking outside of themselves. For me, how I see it play out a lot is in relationships. So if only my spouse would behave a certain way, then I'll feel better. Oh, and if that relationship fails, well, then I need to move on to the next one. Because, you know, it was the other person that was a problem. So now if I have someone new, well, that'll be better, right? So for me, the cycle of emotional pain really is like hopping on this, I call this hamster wheel of striving and never finding, using mud to wash our hair, if you will, looking for things outside of us, a physical thing, to heal an emotional wound. And of course, that can never work because that physical thing was never designed to heal that emotional wound. Only the emotions can do that. So in the cycle of emotional pain, when I'm working with my couples, it's about understanding what's my trauma, what's the emotional pain that it created, how is this relationship, my partner and his or her behaviors triggering my emotional pain, and now how can I use those triggers as opportunities to heal that. So that's kind of my approach to it, and it's really about the emotions, but the brain aspect is fascinating to me as well.
All right, well, it's a great jumping off point. First of all, you said something in the pre-interview that I love, and I've heard it before, and I love it. You know, what's the common denominator? For most of us, we have to go through a few really rocky, painful experiences before we start to realize, wow, this isn't the first time, this isn't even the second time. Maybe this is the third or fourth job or third or fourth relationship or third or fourth situation where I realize, wow, the only thing that's consistent is that I'm involved.
Yeah.
And that the circumstances of who the other person was or where the, you know, what the job was, that wasn't relevant. What was relevant is how I interacted with that particular situation. And I think for most of us, what you were talking about externalizing, look, it's very painful for us to look at ourselves. And part of that reason is, this is something that's really fascinating when you dig deep into understanding behavior, is that we are continuously recreating the same drama of our trauma so that we can attempt to resolve it. Now, a lot of people out there are shaking their heads and going, yeah, I know what that's all about. Isn't it odd that we always attract the same kind of a situation? You were talking about attracting three alcoholic men. It's no coincidence. We set our Geiger counter, you know, we have this unconscious Geiger counter, and I'm going to get into that in a minute, that sets us up to be looking for the tells. Well, you know, they talk about a tell, you know, the police.
Yeah.
We're looking for the tells when we meet someone that they can provide us with the pain that will re-trigger the trauma that will give us an opportunity to work on it. What you were talking about in relationships, except what you were talking about is conscious working on the trauma, being aware that it's your own experience.
Right.
Most of us, we're trying to work on the trauma. We're trying to work it out, so to speak, but we're not conscious of what's going on. Now, just a real quick neuropsych thing. There are two motivating factors in human behavior. One is pain, one is pleasure, moving towards pleasure, and the other one is moving away from pain. Period. That's it. Okay. Those are our motivations. We move towards pleasure. We move away from pain. Now, most of us get imprinted. We have these imprints in our little limbic brains, which is our unconscious brain. And those imprints are like, they're like punched tickets that you get when you go into a parking garage. They've got little codes on them. So that those little codes react to stimuli that match those codes. So if as a child I was, I was lost when I was 2 years old at a fair, and I was completely traumatized, and I have no idea, nobody knows where I was for an hour, but finally they found me. So when I was young, I would go through these nightmares of feeling lost. And even today, at my advanced age, if I'm lost and I don't know where I'm going in my car, it causes me some anxiety. It's gotten so much better. But what is that? That is because the brain is coded so that anything that even comes close to matching those particular hole punches in that card are going to put me on alert. And that's the fight, flight, or freeze mechanism. Now, here's the amazing thing. 90% of our behavior, 90% of it is all unconsciously driven. And this is hard for us to fathom. But what you can prove this to yourself. It's so wonderful. Did you ever get in your car and you were going somewhere and you're thinking about something, you're obsessing about a problem or trying to solve something or going over in your mind, you know, something that's really bothering you. And all of a sudden you arrive at your destination and you go, I don't even remember getting here. I don't remember passing the Dunkin' Donuts. I don't remember going by the grocery store or the ballpark. But there you are. You've arrived at your destination because the unconscious brain is always communicating with the conscious mind. And even though you were intellectually, cognitively thinking about your problem, your unconscious mind motivated your behavior to get you safely to where you were going.
Yeah.
And this is what we're doing all the time. This is what self-actualization, this is what visualization, this is what, you know, all of this success coaching is all about. When you get to connect with your unconscious, with CPU, we have this huge CPU unconsciously that is programming our behavior. So what you're doing is you're actually finding ways to communicate with the CPU so that unconscious driven behavior starts to come to the surface and becomes more available for the person to feel they have control over. But I find it fascinating, and most people have no idea that 90% of our success, failure, behavior, choices, the houses we live in, the jobs we do, this is all unconsciously driven. And it's a wonderful science, you know, cognitive psychology and behavioral psychology is just so brilliant. And I love them, as you do, Joyce. I know that you do, too. So do you want to respond to that in terms of what you're doing with your clients? Because as I see it, what you're doing is trying to reprogram or trying to edit, if you will, delete some files in the CPU.
Right, absolutely. It's about reframing, right? So when the trauma is triggered and our old, I find that the adult will respond to the trauma that's been triggered how they did as a child, right? So if there's, say, abuse in the house, you know, how did they respond? Well, they would often, they'd just hide in their room so that when there's, you know, struggles in the relationship or something has triggered that trauma again, well, they tend to respond how they did as a child. So being aware of the traumas and learning how to manage that trigger is about saying, okay, I'm the adult now. I'm going to respond and react to this situation in a different way. And the more we do that, for one thing, the better we get at it, but the more success we have in managing a trigger. So what's success in terms of managing a trigger? When we're triggered, we always have this starting emotion, right? It's that intense negative emotion, whether it's rejection, whatever it is, right? And the goal of managing the trigger is to shift the emotion. That the success means I've started it with this negative emotion, and now I've managed that emotion. I've managed this trigger to the point where I'm feeling the opposite emotion. Okay, so if there's feelings of rejection, then I've managed that trigger using a different dialogue, and now I'm feeling better. I'm seeing, okay, if my friends went out for dinner without me and I'm triggered and I'm feeling rejected, then the dialogue is about poking a hole in the story, in the trauma story, or in that trigger, or in that experience. So think questions like, well, is it true? Do I know for sure that, you know, I am, because usually if you're feeling rejected, you're usually, the thoughts are, well, there's something wrong with me. I'm not good enough. I'm not lovable. So managing a trigger is poking a hole through the story that we believed about ourselves as a child, okay? So for me, and I often talk about even my childhood triggers, feeling invisible, feeling like I didn't matter was a very common experience for me as a child. This is going, you know, even before my sister's murder. So for me, managing a trigger, say if I'm left out of a family function or whatever, you know, all of that, those feelings of feeling invisible, like I don't matter, will be triggered. So then my goal is to recognize that and then poke holes in the story. Because I always say, again, the trauma sends the kid a message, right? And the kid believes that message hook, line, and sinker, right? I'm unimportant. I'm not good enough. I don't matter. You believe that to the point where you just know it's true, right? Even though it's not. But so the managing a trigger is about poking a hole in the story. So is it really true that if my family or if someone forgot to invite me, does that mean I don't matter? And I always say, even if everyone on the planet hates me, it doesn't matter because I'm okay with me. That, you know, it's like bringing it down to that point where what I always say, what we needed emotionally and didn't get as children, that's exactly what we need to give ourselves in this moment, in this triggered moment. So if I needed that proof that I mattered, that I was important, that I was good enough, and I didn't get that, and if that's what I'm needing right now in this triggered moment, then the goal is to resist looking for it outside of ourselves, right? Why did that friend not invite me? Why did that family member not invite me? Instead of going out there, it's about saying, fine, this happened. Yes, validate that emotion. I do feel rejected. I do feel hurt. But does it really have to mean that I'm not good enough?
Absolutely.
Right?
So, right. Sorry. Yeah, absolutely. That the problem is, I mean, I'm sure you have. I've spoken to 40-year-olds and 50-year-olds who, when they get triggered, you can see their 5-year-old. You can hear their 5-year-old
yeah,
because
exactly.
They have not. One of the things about that I've learned in my many years of, you know, maturing and doing my own discovery work was that if we don't reparent our own child, we're all little children. You know, we all have these wonderful, precious little beings inside of us. And those are the ones who are generally pretty traumatized. But we as adults have to learn to reparent those children and to love them and to tell them, you know, you were small and there were, you know, no one was there to really take care of you, but I'm here now and nothing will happen to you. So what we realize is that this conversation is so foreign to the concepts we have in our culture about, you know, what success is and what being a cool person is. And, you know, aren't you amazing? You know, the thing that always blows my mind, models. What is with the face on models? They all look like they just want to run out of there. The contempt, the anger, the boredom. These are the models. These are the things that we hold up as being, you know, successful and fabulous and wonderful and the things we want to emulate. No, we don't want to emulate that. We want to emulate people who are, as you say, they're very in touch with their feelings. They're very aware of their feelings. They're not blocking them out with posturing and, you know, with behaving in certain ways. So tell us about some of your stories. You must have some wonderful stories about things that have happened to your clients. I can't believe it. We're coming near the second break, but tell us about some of your stories and how people have actually learned, to take control of what's going on with them. And then after the first one, we'll take a short break and come back, okay?
Yeah, sure. So what comes to mind right away is one of the couples that came to me for help with communication, right? That's really common. They describe, you know, not being able to, they have these hot topics, things they fight about and can never seem to resolve. And so they want help with communication. And I say, okay, great, we're going to get to that. But let's understand the trauma piece, the emotional pain part, right? And how that's being triggered. So the fellow in the marriage, he was bullied a lot for about an 8-year period when he was a kid. And also he had a very strict father who criticized him all the time. So I would, you know, label that as the trauma. Now, what did the emotional pain that created was these feelings of inadequacy. I'm not good enough. I'm bad. Okay. Now, his wife, her trauma was she described having a fight with her teenage brother. And he drove away and died in a car accident. Okay?
Oh, boy.
So she had all of this stress and guilt and fear around arguments. Okay? So when I started to get to know them a little bit, and one of the common arguments was that he actually also was a workaholic, by the way, because he's needing to prove that he's great, right? So he's using work success as that external thing, that mud to wash his hair, right? So the work is going to prove I'm good. Anyway, that's another part of it. But so he would often be late for dinner. So that would create an argument. Now, when he'd come home, his wife would criticize him for being late. So there in that moment, that's his trauma being mimicked, right? So similar to his trauma. So that would evoke his intense feelings of shame and feeling inadequate. And so how he would handle that, how he did as a kid, how he adapted to his trauma as a child was to leave. So he would always take off, which would trigger her trauma of getting into an argument and not being able to resolve it. And then she would become more intense and more aggressive, actually. And so they could never, so they thought their solution was to learn how to communicate through that. And I'm like, let's back the truck up here. We have to talk about what's really going on, the emotional pain and suffering that's being triggered that nobody's talking about. So when they started to see, like, holy cow, their triggers, which again, I see over and over and over again, these couples, their triggers are perfect, or their traumas are perfectly matched for each other in the way that the behavior of one will trigger the trauma pain of the other, giving them that opportunity, like you said, to deal with it, right? Mm-hmm. So they had no idea that that was playing out but it was here this firecracker approach. His behavior would trigger her, and her behavior would trigger him. And of course, when we're triggered, you know, and that those emotions are intense, good luck communicating, right? So once we started to understand what was really going on below the surface, right, not those surface conversations about being late for dinner, it wasn't about that. It was about being criticized and feeling shame and fleeing and feeling fear and terror about him dying, all of that. They weren't talking about that. So imagine, I always say you can't solve a problem unless you know what's causing it, right? So we hone in on that root issue. What is the trauma? What is the emotional pain? How is it being triggered? Get that clarity, and then we start the conversation. And then we can actually start to resolve the problems, simultaneously learning how to manage our own triggers so we can reset emotionally and heal that trauma pain. So that was a pretty amazing example. But it happens all the time. Each person's trauma is perfectly matched. In a really difficult way, you know.
Well, you know, it's really quite remarkable because what happens is when we're with another person who gives us a feeling of safety, that they see us, they hear us, and that we're safe with them, they've kind of got our back. You know, they're not going to be condemning or criticizing or rejecting us. It's amazing all the things we can resolve. It's really quite wonderful. We're going to take a break. We're going to take a break, and our last break, and then when we come back, let's talk about, you know, your course and your method, because you were telling me the specifics about your method and, you know, what the steps are. So don't go away, listeners. We will be back again with Joyce, and we're going to get some insights how to deal with resolving our trauma pain.
Dr. Gass is on the advisory board of HealthCorp, a new program which was begun by Dr. Mehmet Oz.
65% are overweight and 35% are obese. And the sharpest rise in this country is between the age group of 4 to 8 years old.
Throughout his career, he has been inspired by patients who have experienced dramatic recoveries through lifestyle changes.
The National Institute of Whole Health is a perfect example of how people will learn to really take control of their lives in a healthy way.
What they've done is they've collected basically the who's who of integrative health, and they've brought them together to give a series of lectures where they can then communicate with health professionals to basically deliver the message that we have to look at medicine from a different perspective.
For more information about the National Institute of Whole Health and their accredited professional continuing educational programs, go to www.wholepersonhealthcare.org or call 1-888-354-HEAL.
If someone said you could transform your life and enhance your relationships by using a few simple communication techniques that can be applied in almost any setting, would you want to learn these skills? If the answer is yes, you've picked up the right book. This easy-to-read guide is loaded with simple skills that have been scientifically shown to have a huge impact on our relationships. By using the steps in this book, you will be able to enhance not only your life, but the lives of everyone around you. If you have the intention to practice and apply these skills, it will become a natural part of who you are. A true must-read for anyone who wants to transform their professional and personal lives. Changing behavior. Immediately transform your relationships with easy-to-learn, proven communication skills by Georgiana Donadio.
You can purchase Changing Behavior by Dr. Georgiana Donadio by visiting Amazon.com, where it is available in both Kindle ebook and paperback.
Are you tired of not feeling heard and not feeling valued? Are you longing to receive the love and respect you want? There is a solution right now. Transform your relationships with easy-to-learn, proven communication skills. Dr. Georgiana Donadio, relationship communication expert and number one national best-selling, award-winning author of Changing Behavior, explores the unconscious patterns contributing to stress, lack of fulfillment, and our relationship interactions. By learning and applying the simple principles of behavioral engagement, which has been clinically tested in leading hospitals, to develop mindful peer presence, you can experience the happiness and fulfillment you deserve in your relationships. Begin changing your behavior today with Living Above the Drama radio show host, Dr. Georgiana Donadio. Call 888-354-4325. 888-354-HEAL. Call now.
Become credentialed for the emerging medical health and wellness field. Work within healthcare environments or start your own private practice and bill for your services with your own NPI number. Train for this exciting specialty in patient-focused health and wellness education with the National Institute of Whole Health, NIWH, the only nationally accredited training program for patient health education and advocacy. Open to credentialed health and education professionals, our training qualifies for health educator liability insurance, a national provider identification number, and our expert-prepared billing and coding manual.
For more information about the National Institute of Whole Health, visit www.niwh.org or call 1-888-354-HEAL, 888-354-4325.
Back with Joyce Schaffers, who is a best-selling author and a workshop facilitator. Joyce has an online self-study course called End the Arguing on her website at joyceschaffers.com. And Joyce calls this program that she put together is really a helpful tool and a training for the cycle of emotional pain that she specializes in helping couples with, so that they can have good, healthy, loving relationships, getting beyond their inability to communicate and beyond their inability to open up their hearts to one another. Joyce, before the break, I said, why don't, when you come back, talk to us about, you've got a process. You also have an online course, which I'm sure many people would be interested in. So tell us, you were talking about the different steps, you know, how emotional pain must be addressed, and trauma pain is pretty much always linked to some really hot topic and some hot trauma, and you talked about painting the picture and finding the solution. So why don't you walk us through that?
Yeah, so when I'm working with couples, and also I set it up this way in the self-study course that I created, is the first part is the awareness part, answering those questions. What are our hot topics? Why, you know, what's really going on when we're fighting? What is my trauma? What is my emotional pain? And, you know, how is it being triggered? So the awareness part comes first, and then the solution part, so the strategies on how to break that cycle of emotional pain. So when I'm working with couples, it really is about, you know, getting clear about those hot topics. So it could be they fight all the time about sex or about money or about helping around the house or whatever it might be. And then, but usually they describe saying, you know, we can't ever seem to get a resolution. We keep just spinning our wheels on these hot topics. Okay, so then once we understand how the behaviors of one are triggering the emotional pain of the other, then two things are needed, okay? The first thing I always say is sometimes our behaviors do need to be tweaked, okay? So what I mean by that is if, you know, like that couple I was talking to you about, okay, constantly coming home late for dinner, not the ideal behavior, right? He would say I'd be home at 5 and he never would come home till like 6:30. So the behaviors often do have to be tweaked. I always say there's helpful behaviors and harmful behaviors in relationships. So we're always wanting, for me, the goal is to always be working towards the helpful behaviors as much as possible. So that's only one part of it, though. The other part is the emotional pain and suffering when it's triggered. Okay, so I already talked about managing that trigger. So for example, that couple, okay, so the fellow, when he was getting criticized, he started to see like, oh my gosh, yeah, everywhere I go, whether it's at work or whether it's with my wife, anytime someone criticizes me, that mimics my trauma of being constantly criticized by my dad. And then it evokes all this pain and suffering, this inadequacy piece, this I'm a bad person, I feel horrible, okay? So now at that point, the tendency is for the person to say, I see you as the problem because your behavior, so in other words, his wife criticizing him, he saw her as the problem. So the focus is on her stopping that, right? But of course she can't because she's extremely aggressive because she's triggered also, okay? So, so to resist that tendency to go out there for the solution and recognize, okay, this is my pain. This is my trauma that I've pulled into this present moment from way back however many years ago. So if it's my pain, then I need to address that. So I'm going to resist looking out there for the solution, and managing a trigger, like I kind of described earlier, is about recognizing what are the thoughts that are going through my mind right now. And usually it's, the shame of feeling like I've done something wrong and I'm bad and I'm inadequate. Those thoughts will evoke those emotions. So the goal of managing the trigger, again, is to poke holes in the truth of that. Well, is it true that because I came home late for dinner that I'm a bad person? Well, no, it just means you came home from dinner late. And yes, if it's a recurring behavior, sure, I should probably tweak that, but I don't need to lump all of this meaning on that one behavior, right? That's
exactly
what we do when we're triggered. So it's about withdrawing that extra meaning and say, okay, yes, I see this is a problematic behavior. I will adjust it and tweak that, but I do not need to throw all that extra emotion and that meaning to it. In other words, I don't need to feel like I'm a horrible and bad person, which is the problem in that moment. That's what that person's problem is they're feeling that intense emotional response. So when you can say, withdraw that meaning and say, okay, question the truth of it. Is it true that I'm a bad person, that I'm late? No. Is it valid that I would feel this way given my past? Valid, yes. Do I wish to sit in this? Or would I like to move away from this emotion? Can I prove to myself instead of needing out there to prove to me that I'm a good person? How can I look to my life and who I am as a person to prove that I'm not a bad person? I'm a good person. When you look for the evidence to support that and affirm that, then that moves you emotionally from that negative, I'm a horrible person feeling to I can be comfortable with myself, right? So that's managing triggers is one of the most powerful strategies, and it absolutely works.
That's a wonderful way to conclude our discussion. I think that what we all need to remember is that a lot of what we do is unconscious, and we seek to repeat the familiar. And what you're offering is a really wonderful way of revisiting what we're reacting to and a process by which we can take a look at it, walk around it, and then come away with a different outcome. I think it's a wonderful thing, Joyce. And let's, as we're closing in this last minute, let's just tell our listeners your website is Joyce, Joyce, schaffers.com. And your email is support@Joyce-Schaefer. Is it Schaefer's.com, right? Joyce-Schaefer's.com. You can also find Joyce's her workshop and her course on her website if you're interested. And I'm sure that she would be delighted to hear from you if you'd like to know how you can do this for yourself, even at home, and give yourself a better shot at having a really fulfilling relationship. Joyce, thank you so much for being with us today.
Oh, well, thank you so much for having me. I appreciate your interest in my work, and I'm fascinated by yours as well. Thank you so much.
You're so welcome. And listeners, don't forget to join us again next week when we have another interesting, educational, and insightful conversation here on Living Above the Drama.